So, the first thing that we'll talk about, we're going to talk about the idea of the dreidel. We're going to talk about the idea of the of Chanukah gelt, right? Giving out money, giving out gifts. But I first wanted to talk a little bit about the one of the messages of Hanukkah, one of the messages of the story. And the question is, why did the Greeks, when they entered the temple, defile the oil? Right? We're told that the Jewish people, when they came into the temple after the battle, after the victory, they saw that the Syrian Greeks had defiled all of the oil that was used to kindle the menorah in the temple. And so the idea is they didn't take the oil. They didn't steal the oil. They just defiled it, right? They broke the seal of the high priest, of the Kohen Gadol. They just broke the seal of the oil, and that sort of rendered it impure. That's more of like a legal issue. But the idea that the Greeks would do that, the question is why? What would they have against the idea of the oil, of kindling the menorah? And so one answer could be that the Greeks, they disliked the idea of spirituality and of sometimes going beyond rational thought. So on the one hand, the Jewish people have the concept of Am Navon V'Chacham, an understanding and wise people, wise nation. And so what that means is that we have the ability to express ourselves in a very logical and like complex way in terms of the things that we in terms of the things that we do, and in terms of how we project ourselves to the rest of the world, right? We know, as a wise people, we have a very large percentage of Nobel laureates, right? People that win the Nobel Prize are Jews. We're a very wise nation. A lot of our, if you just look at a page of Talmud and how legally complex and intricate it is, it's astounding. And so we definitely, the Jewish people can definitely proudly claim a heritage of intellectual prowess and intellectual abilities as seen in different ways. And at the same time, we also have chukim, right? So the first idea of rational intellectual thought is can be summed up by the idea of mishpatim that the Torah talks about. Mishpatim, the statutes of the Torah, the logical commandments that we're told to invest ourselves in. And at the same time, we have chukim. We have things that where the message is beyond us, where we don't really understand everything, every aspect of what we're engaging in. For example, the idea of the red heifer and how the an individual that becomes impure, the Kohen helps him become pure by utilizing the red cow, and it's a very interesting service, and yet we're left wondering, even King Solomon, the smartest of all, wisest of all men, was left wondering what was the idea behind Parah Adumah, right? Behind this idea of using the red cow. And so there are many other examples of these kinds of chukim, where it's beyond rationality, right? It's spirituality, which is can't be summed up as straight logic. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. It's something beyond that, and it's something, you know, that we believe is, you know, comes to us from God. So going back to the Hanukkah story, So the Greeks, they appreciated one half of what we just described in Judaism. Right? Hello? Is it still going?
It is. We're listening.
Okay.
We're seeing.
Okay. So the Greeks appreciated the intellectual ideas of Judaism, right? Of comparing and contrasting the different laws and the logical ideas of Judaism, and so which we definitely have, and so they appreciated that. What they did not appreciate was the spiritual nature of Judaism, of, you know, celebrating the Sabbath, you know, one day a week. On the one hand, maybe they appreciated the fact that, you know, everyone can use a day of rest, and at the same time, they perhaps, you know, didn't appreciate the different rules, the different customs, you know, that we do, that we, you know, we try to have our food prepared before the Shabbos, and things like that, where they said, that's not rational, that's not logical, what's the idea of that, what's the point of that? And that's what bothered them, because I think they, if not for that, I think they would have gotten along with the Jewish people on that level. And yet, I think they were bothered by the fact that we have these kinds of unique customs that didn't fit in to their outlook on life, and therefore, that's why they rallied against us. And it was specifically in ideas like circumcision, which we talked about a few weeks ago. Again, Shabbat, Shabbos, the idea of Rosh Chodesh, the idea of there being the first of the month, that that the Jewish calendar is based on the moon. All these different ideas that they didn't really grasp, right? They may have thought that they may have gone specifically and solely by a solar calendar. And yet the Jewish people use the lunar calendar and the solar calendar, a combination. And so they said, well, you know, what do you need all that for? You know, and so we continued to practice it. And so they didn't like us doing that, and that's why they, you know, waged war and they tried to attack us, and so that's why they defiled the oil in the temple, because to them, you know, lighting a candelabra when there was a light, right? It wasn't like at midnight where they needed light like a torch. You're lighting this menorah, you know, this gold, you know, candelabra in your temple. Like, what's the point of that? Where's the rationality of that? And so it defiled the oil. They said, this is nonsensical, right? Why, you know, the Jewish people are strange people for having this special kind of oil. And so the fact that we were able to find one flask, one cruse of oil, and have that last us for all 8 days was, you know. So that's the miracle of Hanukkah. That's the miracle of Hanukkah. And so an additional idea can be that we all have in ourselves, we all have this cruse of oil, right? We all have this idea that we have within ourselves something special, right? That we can bring to the forefront, right? Just like they found this, you know, one secure jug of oil that was still sealed that they could still use in the temple, you know, even though the Greeks were, you know, rallying against us and succeeded in 99% of the oil they defiled. But that one last jar of oil was found, and they were able to use it until they got more oil for the menorah, for the candelabra in the temple. And that's an idea for ourselves, that we can all find that little bit of oil, so to speak, that little bit of like strength, inspiration that we can give to other people, right? Put a smile on someone else's face. We all have that within ourselves, and we just need to access it. Related to that, there's a story of a student in public school, that a Jewish student, he's the only Jewish student in his public school, and they take a trip. They take a class trip downtown, and it's around, Hanukkah and Christmas time, and the students are looking in the shop windows at all the the tinseltoe and all the special Christmas decorations, and he saw it also, but he wasn't so moved by it, right? Because it was foreign to him. He was a young student, and so the teacher said, what's wrong? And he said, well, I don't really identify with, some of the, the things that we're, the things that we're seeing, respectfully, of course. And then they turn the corner and they see downtown a huge menorah, right? They do these menorah lightings downtown. So he said, that's mine, right? That belongs to me. That menorah that I see right now, that belongs to me. That's what I identify with. And so, it's a similar idea of finding our inspiration. Okay, so the next thing is that we talked about finding the oil, which had enough oil to last for one night, but then the miracle was that it lasted for all eight nights, for seven more nights. And so the famous question is, if it lasted for one night on its own, and the miracle was just seven more nights, so then why do we celebrate eight nights of Hanukkah? Well, we should only celebrate seven, because the first night really was not a miracle. I mean, we had the oil, and therefore we were able to light. The fact that seven more nights, that's the miracle. So let's just celebrate Hanukkah for seven nights, not for eight nights. And so this question actually has over 100 answers given for it, for this question of why do we celebrate that extra night of Hanukkah, that eighth night, or the first night of the eight. Many answers are given. I guess, to make this interactive, does anyone have an idea of what the purpose is of having 8 days of Hanukkah if really the miracle was only 7 days? Why do we celebrate an eighth day? Right? They had the oil that was used for one night. That wasn't a miracle, right? So we should only celebrate seven nights. Does anyone have any ideas?
Does it have anything to do with the fact that we celebrate Rosh Hashanah for 2 nights, because we don't have the same time?
Excellent. Very good. That is an answer that I just saw. The idea that in the diaspora, and then, like you said, Israel for Rosh Hashanah, that we have an extra day. So it says to celebrate on Rosh Hashanah on the first of Tishrei, and there was a time in Jewish history when they weren't sure exactly which day was the first day of the month, right? And now we have calendars, but before calendars, it was based on who saw the moon, and There were questions about when exactly the first day was. And so they kept an extra day. And even in Israel, they keep that second day of Rosh Hashanah, like you said. So that's a very good answer. So too with Hanukkah. Really, you're right. 7 days of celebration for the miracle is what we want. The eighth night is really just because we're not sure which day is the 25th of Kislev. So we do an extra day because we're not sure about when that first day is. Excellent. Now, there's some questions on this answer, though, that seem to put the answer in
Grant,
some...
I have a question here.
Yes.
He looked for oil to celebrate one day. So that is the day of celebration. But then what's a miracle? Kept staying lit. So we observe the additional 7. The first day is what they looked for to celebrate. That is the day of celebration, and the 7 days are for the miracle.
Excellent. Very good. That's another good answer. That there's different variations on your answer. One variation is the first day they found the oil, which was a miracle in and of itself. Even though it had enough oil, but they didn't even know they would find it. So, also the fact that the first day was, you're right, like that's when they were able to go back in, into the temple and to restart everything, to rebuild everything. So you're right, that was the celebration that happened, and then it was a bonus, the extra 7 nights. Excellent, very good. Another answer is that the first, you know, one day could be commemorating the fact that we won in the battle. We were successful in the battle, which allowed us to then enter into the temple. So, you know, one night for the battle and 7 nights for the miracle. Another answer is that there's an alternative text which says that we may not have even had enough oil even for one night. So even though, you know, we mostly assume the idea that they did have for one night, but some say that it might be that we didn't have, you know, even that little flask of oil might not have had enough oil to last even for one night. So even the first night was a miracle in and of itself. The last answer is that Sukkot, the holiday of Sukkot, is 8 days. And so too, well, you have to add in Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, etc. But combining that with Sukkot, we have 8 days. And so they wanted to make Hanukkah also 8 days. Now, why would there be a connection between Sukkot and Hanukkah? They're two different holidays, right? One's from the biblical times, and one's from temple times, second temple times. So what's the connection of, I'm sorry, first temple times. So, there's more connections between these two holidays. So there's an idea that in Israel, they actually put their Hanukkah menorahs, in Israel called Chanukiyas, outside. Because the Talmud says that it should really be outside by the doorway. Why? To publicize the miracle as much as possible. Nowadays, we put it in a place like by a window, which, you know, indoors, because we don't really, we don't really put fires and things outside anymore, but they used to. And Sukkot features the sukkah, which is also outside. In both holidays, we have the idea of hidur mitzvah, of taking the mitzvah, the objects, and making them as good as we can, right? Whereas, so in Sukkot, we try to make the sukkah as nice as possible, and we try to get, you know, a nice citron etrog, you know, that looks nice. And so too with Hanukkah, we also try to do the mitzvah as best as possible. Really, the mitzvah can be accomplished, of lighting the menorah can really just be accomplished by lighting one candle every night. That's originally what the Talmud says. But then we wanted to increase the idea, and since it's rabbinic, we're allowed to do this. So we say, okay, everyone in the house should light a candle, or every night we should light according to the number of nights. So the first night one, the second night two, which of course is how we do it now. And then they said, the best thing to do is if everyone in the house lights their own menorah, and each menorah they light corresponding to that, to the night. Everyone lights one menorah on the first night with one, and then the second night everyone lights two, etc. So that idea of doing that, going above and beyond, is the same idea in Sukkot about going above and beyond and trying to get a very nice etrog, a very nice citron. So these are the connections between Hanukkah and Sukkot. And the Midrash says that the Greeks wanted to abolish the holiday of Sukkot from the Jewish people, right? And they didn't let the Jewish people bring the sacrifices for Sukkot. Again, like we said before, they didn't think it was, these kinds of holidays, they didn't understand, they didn't buy into them. And so too, so therefore, right, so to speak, God says, you know what? They're going to celebrate, they're going to have this new holiday, and it's going to be like Sukkot. Because the Greeks caused them to miss Sukkot. So God's, so to speak, reinstating Sukkot and therefore they came up with the idea that Hanukkah should be 8 days, just like Sukkot. So, okay, fine. So now we're going to get to a couple other things. So the first idea is, why do we have the concept of Hanukkah gifts, right? Why do we have presents on Hanukkah? Is it just to mimic the other holiday celebrations that are going on where they give out presents, where kids get presents? So we just adopted that, or maybe they adopted it from us. Or is there something deeper? Is there something more significant to the fact that we give out, especially to kids, we give out Hanukkah presents, right? Hanukkah gifts. So
originally, we did not give out gifts 8 days. I remember we would get together and go to grandfather's house and we'd be passing out gifts. Gift each day of Hanukkah, that's to come to Christmas. That's fairly recent. When I was a child, they did not give gifts 8 days. But we as parents did.
Right. And we spoil them.
So she's here tonight. She was really, she had a really rough day yesterday. She didn't realize that she was supposed to shower. But she's here today, and she said she would give you a shower today, okay?
So, yeah, I thought the idea of the gifts, okay, was because of Christmas. But I remember my Sadie used to give us a coin.
Right.
Sure.
Absolutely, right. Hanukkah gelt. Excellent. So so I appreciate both of your answers. So that's actually very good, because that's part of the answer. Really, you're right. Presents came as a modern thing. Really, the idea was Hanukkah gelt, was money, right? Like you said, a coin. Now, you know, they do chocolate coins, but really it's money. So the question is, why money specifically? So actually, there's a bunch of reasons why specifically Hanukkah gelt was given. So, and some of them have to do with the Jewish law, and some of them are more philosophical. So the philosophical reasons is, one, Maimonides says that that one is allowed to give gifts to students that are studying the Torah, or not one is allowed. One is encouraged to give. One is encouraged to give gifts. One is encouraged to give prizes to students that are studying, because it helps them learn. And later on, you wean them off the prizes, right? But for the, you know, while they're students, you know, and obviously a lot of schools do this, right? They incentivize the students, and that's a good thing, says Maimonides, because that allows them to learn. So when the Greeks wanted to abolish Torah study for the kids, for the youth, so we missed out on a lot of, you know, teachings. A lot of learning was lost. And so when we were able to defeat the Greeks, so they used to, in a way, to recapture the minds of the students that they should re-engage in Torah study. They used to give them, you know, some money, right, to re-incentivize them. And so that's one of the practices that we do, is we give out money to remind ourselves of this idea that they used to, give out this money to reinstitute the joy for Torah study from these students. Another idea is that giving money on Hanukkah itself shows that it's not just like a birthday check, which is totally fine, but it's more than that. It's you're using money, right? You're using the physical material world, and you're uplifting it because you're using it in accordance with the holiday, right? You're celebrating the holiday, you know, by giving the students, by giving, you know, everyone, by giving kids, adults, you know, presents, you know, to add to the celebration of the holiday. That's uplifting the material. And then a couple of Jewish law points, which are very interesting, is that the Talmud says that you're not supposed to count your money by the light of the menorah, because that's an example of not using the menorah for personal light. So back in the day, right, thousands of years ago, so obviously they used a lamp like the menorah would be used for light in the house, especially at nighttime. But Talmud says, no, you have to get some other lights, right? Use your usual lights for light, right, to see, to read, whatever. But keep the menorah light as just something as part of the mitzvah, as part of the commandment, right? You shouldn't use it to read by or to count your money by, because then you're just basically kindling another lamp, right? It's just another torch. There's nothing special about it. So we try to not use the light of the menorah to, you know, to read or anything. And one of the examples, again, is counting one's money. So that's another idea. When you give out the gelt, the money, to remind ourselves, make sure, don't count it by the light of the menorah. The last idea, also Jewish law, is that the Talmud talks about if you don't have enough money for Kiddush or for Hanukkah candles. You only have enough money to either buy wine or to buy some extra candles for Hanukkah, but you don't have enough money for both. Nowadays, we're spoiled in that we're able to afford everything. But, you know, obviously, there was a time when that was not always the case. And so the idea was that they used to give out extra money to those that were in need. We used to do this actually on Pesach, and we do it on Purim, right? We do this a bunch of times during the year, specifically around holidays, to ensure that everyone can celebrate the holiday, because things cost money. And so we give the money to those in need to be able to purchase both the Kiddush and the Hanukkah, right? And maybe, you know, some money for potatoes so you can make latkes. Like, that's the idea of giving money specifically around Hanukkah. And so maybe the fact that we give money and presents now is like, you know, reliving that. Okay. And so some families are strict, I guess, to only give out money, not necessarily gifts, because, again, we have a lot of reasons, Jewishly, for giving out money, not so much for giving out gifts. But, you know, the idea of giving out gifts is, you know, because what's like a, what's a six-year-old going to do with, you know, $5 or on their own? So you give them a gift. So, okay. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about is the dreidel. What are the origins? What's the history of the dreidel? And what's the symbolism of the dreidel? So, excellent. Very good. Excellent. The students, right? So we said that the students needed to be reintroduced to Torah study because the Greeks were persecuting us and not letting us, you know, do it. However, there were some students that surreptitiously, like you said, were able to go into a cave or, you know, somewhere in the forest and study, you know, quietly. Now, I don't think it was all students because I don't think every student has the ability to do that. But the ones, I guess, that were very dedicated used to do that. But if the Greeks found them, that would be bad news. So whenever they heard the Greeks coming, they would put away the books and they would take out the dreidels and they would play with it, right? And so we have the same idea, a similar idea by bows and arrows, by Lag BaOmer, that when, you know, also when they were, when the students were being persecuted, so they used to play bow and arrow instead of study, to signify the fact that they were just playing around. They weren't doing anything else, but really they were studying. Okay, so what? Okay, so then what happened was they used to, so what letters do we put on the dreidel? We put Nes Gadol Hayasham. We put a Nun, a Gimel, a Shin, and a Hey. Right? Nes Gadol Hayasham. A great miracle happened there. Happened in Israel. So that's what the dreidels say when you're not in Israel. When you are in Israel, you replace Sham with Po. A great miracle happened here, right, because you're in Israel itself. So that was the letters, but the letters have a lot of different symbolisms, right? So there's midrashic explanations of the letters, and each letter represents a different exile, a name of an exile that the Jewish people were part of. And there's also like a Yiddish meaning, because the game of dreidel, of course, involves, you know, it's like dice, right? So the shin for sham also can mean shtel arayin, put it in, right? In other words, when you land on a shin, you have to put the money, you lose your money, I guess. You have to put your coins back in the middle. For a nun, it's nit. You get nothing. For gimel, it's gantz. You get everything. And for hey, it's halb. You get half. Right? So that's the game of dreidel. Now there is an idea that in England and Ireland, you can look it up, there's a game called Totem or Teototem, which is played around, you know, the winter holidays. And in Latin, tota means all, which makes sense because total, right, means all, means everything. So it's interesting that they used up the letters on the dreidel, on the top, because they used a top similar to a dreidel, and so the letters were T, H, P, and N. So T stood for take all, H stood for half, P stood for put down or put in, and N stood for nothing. So it's interesting that three of the letters are the same, right? The N, the P, and the H are the Nun, the Pei, and the Hey. The T for take all, we have Gimel for Ganz. So that's the only difference. So, you know, all these things are probably, right? Dreidel, of course, is Yiddish. In Hebrew, it's Sivivon, because Saviv means to go around. So the dreidel goes around. Interesting fact about dreidel is that if you can look up a video at Yeshiva University, a couple of years ago, they did a thing where they tried, I think they actually broke the record for Guinness World Record for number of consecutive dreidels being spun. I don't remember if it was like 700, 800 or even more, maybe 1,000. I don't remember the exact number, but it's just an interesting video that maybe I could show you when I get a chance. So that's the idea about dreidel. Of course, nowadays they make very nice decorative dreidels, which is it's definitely part of the holiday. The last idea that I wanted to say is that in Judaism, there's another holiday which has something that we spin around, right? So what's that other symbol? What's that other thing from a different holiday that we spin around? Who could think of it? It comes after Hanukkah in the calendar. So I'll give you a hint. It has to do with Purim. The grogger, right? So what's the difference between a
grogger? Oh, yes.
So what's the difference between a grogger and a dreidel?
The grogger makes noise, and you want to make the noise so in the name of Haman it can't be heard.
Excellent. The purpose of the grogger, like you said, is during the Megillah reading to drown out Haman's name. Excellent. The purpose of a dreidel, as we said, is you play a game with it. So you're right, they are different purposes. But there's another interesting difference between the two. Structurally. Yeah.
What's the handle and...
Yeah. So what about the handle?
Both have handles.
Yes, but are they in the same spot?
One is attached only on one spot here, and the other is attached in the middle.
Okay. In other words,
of this evil power man, children are making noise when his name is said. Instead of all hail and all hail.
Yes.
Children are making noise.
Yes.
It's an insult to Haman.
That's correct. But again, structurally, the grogger, the handle's on the bottom, and you whip it around. The dreidel, the top,
it's on the top.
So is there any significance to that? So obviously, that could just be, you know, how you do it. Some people can, you know, spin it the backwards way with a dreidel. So it could just be that's just structurally that's, you know, how these two things are made. But there's an interesting idea from a Hasidic Rabbi Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, known as the Bnei Yisaschar. He was a Hasidic master, very interesting thinker. So he said the following. He offered the following approach. He said that with Purim, all the events kind of seemed natural. The heroine of the story, Esther, is, you know, summoned, you know, as part of the beauty contest or whatever it was, and she's selected to be the queen. and then there just happens to be an issue affecting her people, but she didn't tell anyone about it, and she's able to intercede. But then it also happens to be that the king, Ahasuerus, couldn't rest, couldn't sleep well one night, and read about an episode where a Jew once helped him out and saved his life because he happened to overhear two people plotting to kill the king, and he saved him, and then he rewarded him, and then Esther, you know, was able to intercede on the Jewish people, etc. So it all seems like a thriller, right? It would be a great movie, but it's everything's natural. With Hanukkah, the miracle, it's a miracle. I mean, the oil, the fact that this oil lasted for 8 nights, right? However you understand it, but the miracle of the oil, the miracle of the battle, right? You have these Maccabees that were going up against this great Syrian Greek army, and we won. And so the miracles are slightly different, right? The miracles in the Hanukkah story are very overt, right? They're very like, oh my God, wow, that's amazing, right? You found this little oil, right? You beat this, you know, this as underdogs, you beat this great army. Whereas by Purim, it's kind of like things sort of just, you know, happen behind the scenes. And yet, we're told that, you know, we trust that God is behind everything. God was behind both events. Obviously, God was behind Hanukkah, but also God is behind Purim as well, right? That all the events, while they seem to be natural, there was a guiding hand behind everything. And so that's the fact that God's able to work behind the scenes. What is this?
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
Were the rulers in the time of Hanukkah Syrian or Greek?
So I think they were Syrian and Greek. They were coming from Syria. They were living in Syria, near a lot closer to Israel than Greece. But they were from Greek heritage. So it's kind of like saying an American Italian. They're Italian, right? Their name is Massimino, but they live in Philadelphia, right? So I think it was kind of like that, right? The guy's name is Sophocles, but he lived in Syria. I'm not like an expert on all the details, but I believe that's roughly the answer. But so just to finish this idea up. So when it comes to the dreidel, right, the top, the way you spin it, the top part is on top, not on bottom. Because that's like God spinning the events and making the oil, making them find the oil and helping them that the oil should last all 8 nights and helping them in the battle, right? This is what we say, Al Hanisim, right, that we thank God for the miracles, right? That's with Hanukkah. That's why the dreidel, it's on the top. Because it's you could see it in heaven, right? You could see it clearly that God's helping. By Purim, the groger, the way you spin it, it's on the handle's on the bottom. Meaning this world. Everything appeared to be natural events, one after the other. And yet, the idea that God was behind it all. So even when you spin it from the bottom, from this world, the events that are happening in this world, yet it's still the fact that we still use it in celebration of Purim, where we also say Al Hanisim, right? Thank you, God, for the miracles of the Purim story, because God is behind that as well. It's just that it appeared to be more just like mundane events, one after the other, and that's why the handle for the groger is on the bottom, because it appeared to be more something in this world, but really, in essence, it was not.
So, we have a comment.
Yes.
However, the goddess
in the story of Purim.
Yes.
There is in the morning service a bunch of brachot.
Yes.
One of them says, Ozer Yisrael Bivurah.
Yes.
God who girds the people Israel with courage. God gave Queen Esther the courage.
Absolutely.
Like, that is God's role all the time with all of us, to give us courage.
Absolutely.
And that is God is in the story of Purim.
Absolutely, but one could have said, well, you know, Esther is like this, you know, unbelievable great spokeswoman and, you know, politician and diplomat, but you're right, because really, she was like an orphaned, you know, Jewish girl that didn't necessarily want to do any of this, so the fact that she was able to, you're absolutely correct, was inspiration and strength that she got from God. That's absolutely correct. That's absolutely correct. Okay. So obviously Hanukkah this year is not when Thanksgiving is. They don't overlap, but when they do overlap, there's, you know, this interesting connection between, you know, showing thanks and Hanukkah, which is also about showing thanks to God. This year, however, you know, they don't intersect, but some years, several years ago, they did. But you know, even as we come to Thanksgiving, we can use the idea of Hanukkah, of showing thanks, you know, for everything that we have in our lives. And, you know, it's, you know, the idea of gratitude, we learned in this last week's Torah portion, Yehuda comes from Odeh, right? That Odeh Hashem, I will acknowledge God, is what Leah used to name her son Yehuda, and we're all called Yehudim, Jews of gratitude. So whether it's Thanksgiving, whether it's Hanukkah, the idea of showing gratitude, so I show gratitude to everyone for coming, and I apologize, it was not face-to-face today, but logistically, that's what worked out, and I thank Mary also for helping coordinate.
You were right.
Yeah. We lost the connection.
Oh, okay. Well, I finished. So, everyone, have a good day, good rest of the day, and I will see you soon.
Okay, we got a comment here, though.
Okay, I'm still here.
Establish Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Very religious Christians.
Yes.
They knew the holiday of Sukkot. And Thanksgiving is just the Christian American version of our Sukkot.
Aha, right? Because it has to do with the harvest season.
Thank you. She'll be back.
Excellent. Very good.
She'll be back. Yeah.
Okay, everyone have a wonderful day, a wonderful Thanksgiving, wonderful Shabbat, and I will see you all soon. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.